after every meal. So after dinner,
some of us got to wash the dishes, some of us got to wash the pots and pans, some of us got to wipe the table, clean the kitchen floor, you know, the dining room floor and all this. And we each have a duty to do. And one day, my younger brother happened to have the duty. He's 10 years old at the time, right? So I'm telling you, very young kids do know how to ask this question. He's given the duty of getting the rubbish out to the rubbish bin. And he does it every night. And one day he came and approached me. He's a lot younger than I am. He says, "Why does it always have to be me to bring out the rubbish? Why can't somebody else do it?" Now, this is a question which is very often asked by people. Of course, when adults ask this question, it's got a different reason to it. I mean, we don't ask, "Why is that to be me that I got to eat my breakfast every morning or prepare the bacon and eggs or whatever?" Right? We don't ask questions that way. We only ask this question as adults when we are helpless or when we are in despair. And something goes wrong and we can't stand it anymore. We just want, "Why does it have to be me?" Unfortunately, when we are very successful, when we are happy, nobody asks the question. Or if you ever ask the question, the answer is very simple. "Oh, because you are clever," or "because I am clever," "because I'm lucky." But when things go wrong, you say, why does it always happen to me? So, whichever way you find that, it's not a pleasant situation you're in when you ask this question. Now, supposing a non-Buddhist were to ask this question, I would tell them, "You have never heard about Buddhism, that's why you ask this question." Supposing a Buddhist like you would ask this question, then I'll answer you, "You have never understood Buddhism. Maybe the Buddhism you practice until now is a bit off the track. Maybe you've got plenty of different brands of Buddhism, different styles of Buddhism. Some Buddhists told me you don't have to worry about any other thing. You just have to be compassionate. Just do all the good things, the charitable things, and you'll be right." But unfortunately, a lot of times when people who are very charitable also have got situations where they don't like. They come into something, you have charitable, okay, you drive to do some charity work, and then suddenly your car hit the lamppost. Then they come out, why does it always happen to me? Well, it's because they never understood Buddhism. They only did the charitable work. Some Buddhists will come and tell me, "Oh, it's good to be vegetarian and then everything will be all right for you." So when a vegetarian drives a car, they still can hit the power pole and still get the same question. So in other words, if a Buddhist were to ask these sort of questions, they haven't really followed the Buddha's teachings or really understood the Buddha's teachings. Well, if you ask again, if I tell you what the Buddha's teaching is all about, this Dharma talk is going to be very, very short. I think you all know the answer already, because this is the last Dharma talk of the session. So how many Dharma talks have we got, Katek? 13. Right, 13 question, 13 session, and if nobody mentions about it, then the universe is going the wrong way too. So what is it all about? The Buddha has taught us how to answer this question. The Buddha has taught us how to deal with this thing before you ask this question. If you heard about the Four Noble Truths, I'm quite sure past speakers, I think I spoke about the Four Noble Truths in the first talk I gave here this year. Buddhist practice. And if you still don't understand it, then it's good that I come here the last round. I can give you a round up, you see. What is the First Noble Truth? Life is suffering. That means in life we have a lot of problems. Now, if you got no problem in your life, then something is wrong with you. As Achan, what's this? Achan Brahma said, when you go and see a doctor, well, you always ask the doctor, what's wrong with me? But if you are a good practicing Buddhist, you should be asking the doctor, what's right with me? Because to be sick is natural. To be sick is part of existence. So, we know that there's a lot of these problems in life. And when the problem starts to get unbearable, we ask this question. Why does it always have to be me? Because we don't understand. Now, in life, we have a lot of problems. I'm quite sure, without me mentioning to you, you know already. Since from this morning, say, from 8 o'clock this morning until now, how many problems do you have? It may not be a big problem. Maybe it may not be that your girlfriend or boyfriend have left you. May not be that. Of course, when they leave you, that's a good way of asking this question. But still, I've got so many things, right? Small little things, and we keep on picking it. And as we pick up the problems, then we start having this stressful state. And when the stress becomes too much, then we all wonder, why does this thing always happen to me? So I think you have picked a very good subject, Hendrik, to have. Now, as we say in life, nobody escapes from problems. When we start to grow a bit older, now for you all it's alright because you still got a few more years to grow about your youth. But when you look at people like me at this vintage, sometimes you think, when you get up in the morning and you find that the joints are creaking and you can't walk as fast as my grandson, I can't walk as fast as my grandson. So I felt, oh, it's horrible to be old, isn't it? And I can't ask the question, this question, because I'm a Buddhist, so I can't ask this question. I got to understand. Once you start to understand, then you won't ask this question. But all these things, growing old is natural, normal. In this world, nobody can stop themselves or nobody can make others not grow old. Do you agree on it? Yeah. Except to be artificially young. That's why cosmetic surgeries and all these things, they are making a killing. Right? For you, those of you who don't enroll yourself in cosmetic surgery, because you're missing the chance. So, when we look at it, it is unavoidable. But unfortunately for us, we want to go the other way. I always look sometimes, if I'm not careful, I think, when I was young, I could climb the mountain in 2 minutes. And now it takes me half a day to do it. So you start to feel unhappy about it. And when you start to feel unhappy, it becomes a stress. Now, supposing I were to tell myself, I don't have the stamina anymore, like a young person. Right? Or even young person sometimes don't have stamina. So, I wouldn't be able to do it. And accept the fact. Now, supposing now I can run 100 meters in 20 minutes, right? And the fella who is doing the Olympics can run in 11 seconds. Then, if I were to try to follow his way and say, no, I can do it, right? Then towards the end there, I'll die of heart attack. I'll get all the joints pain and all these things if I don't die. Right? I'll be exhausted and so on. Or maybe somebody is going to pick me up halfway. Right? So this is the thing. If we do not accept the situation, then you get a lot of problems. But when you talk about acceptance in Buddhism, it's not to be resigned to things. Right? It's not to say that, I can't do it, therefore I won't do it. We can try to do it. We must do our best to do it. The same way when we talk about learning about the Buddha's teachings. Sometimes we go to see a teacher, he tell you, Buddha's teaching is very profound, very deep. Right? And then you just started looking so profound, so deep, maybe it's not for me. And we never bother to try. So therefore, we must always use our judgment and say, it's deep, it's profound, but I'll try to do it, and I'll try my best. So in the way, as a practicing Buddhist, we always do our best, right? Not to give up easily. Right? So that is the thing between, the difference between acceptance and being resigned to a certain thing. Right? Now, we also have got other things which is a problem to us. You know, towards the end of your life, we are going to die one day. And a lot of people can't accept dying. Actually, most people don't accept dying either. Because you know the words they use to describe dying. Say, you pass on, you pass away, all the nice terms. You know? Like some Chinese, they say, you go to the next life, or you go to sit on the lotus throne. All the funny words they use, they won't use the word die. And the Buddha, in the scripture, the Buddha says die all the time. He never used the euphemisms. Never used nice words about that. It's just bare fact, we got to die. And when you acknowledge that, then it's easier to die. For most people, they find death is very, very difficult. It's not only our own death, but death of other people whom we love. When somebody we love dies, then we get a stress. And when we get difficult times with the death, we ask this question again. Why do you have to go? Why have I got to lose you? So this is the way it is, not understanding. But there are other things which are worse than these two things I said just now, being old and die. It's just still a very remote thing to most of you. Right? You're not going to die tomorrow, we hope. Right? Maybe if you take the law of averages, by the time you grew up to be 60, the age where people die will be something like 100 years old. Right? When I was your age, when people die at 60 years old, they say they are very old. And now, people die at 80. So by the time you guys go to my age, people who live to 100 years old are still considered young. Being old is not a problem yet. Death is not a problem yet. But you guys have got plenty of other problems. One of them is sickness. That's Buddha's teaching. Go back to your Four Noble Truths. You're going to fall sick. And it's during this time that a lot of people get a lot of problems with it. They can't handle sickness. The doctors can. Even some doctors, because they are not there to be sick. Right? But when we ourselves fall sick, what happens inside here? I mean, if you get just cold or flu or whatever, it's all right. But supposing you get a sickness which is much worse than that. Supposing you're the doctor tells you you've got a tumor in your brain. What's going to happen? Panic. And the panic brings us to ask this question. Well, if you ask people, why do I get it? Then you're in for a lot more problems. Different people have got different ways of answering this why. Why do I fall sick? Some people, you look at all the primitive religions, they tell you it's caused by spirits and God. In the Old Testament, I read sometimes when God is not happy with people, they make all of them get small, smallpox. Right? They get make people die or whatever, right? And they get all sorts of funny diseases, leprosy, and all these things. Then in some of the Asian religions, they believe that it's because of the spirits working. The ancient, you go back to the Chinese teachings long time ago, about 4,000 years ago, they believe that it's the dead spirits, the ancestor spirits that come to cause all these problems. So if we were to go into that way of arguing, to say that it's caused by something outside us, by a spirit or by a God or whatever, then we are going to have the next step, next problem too. The first problem is not understanding it. The second problem you're going to make the misunderstanding even worse. Right? And once you start to believe that it's caused by outside things, then you go further to say, how can I stop it? And people will tell you that, some people will tell you that you believe in certain things, you do certain things, then it'll help. The certain things is other than taking good medicine or getting good medical treatment. But some people will say, oh, just believe in the particular God, whatever, it will help you to heal your sickness. And it's still going around in Australia, would you believe that? There's the spiritual healing going on. You go around and the fellow will come and sing songs and jump around a bit and then put a hand on you. Oh, you're healed. Right? I mean, I know that it does. They still happen here in Kensington. And then some will tell you, okay, now you do certain things, right? Especially those of you who come from Southeast Asia. Right? Very popular. You get mediums and things. Right? And then you go and go to a saint's shrine and just offer some curry or something and hope that the sickness goes. Well, sometimes it helps, but most of the time it doesn't. A lot of people will tell you, you don't have to do all these things, just pray will do. Right? So you pray and pray and pray, and sometimes the sickness goes away, and then you say, ah, it worked. But most of the time the sickness doesn't go away. Now, recently I also read in the papers, not recently, last year, when somebody claimed that certain saints can help to heal diseases. Right? Some people have got cancer and then all of a sudden the parents went to pray in a saint's grave and then suddenly the cancer went off, went into remission. And they say it's a saint's work. But I'm doubtful because at the same time they also seek some medical treatment. They went to the oncology department and helped to treat them. So in other words, when you talk about this power of prayers and all these things, it may not work. And usually, if it really works, then what I would suggest is, the next time you're sick, right, just go and pray and see whether you get well or not. Prayers certainly work in some ways to help you to calm down the mind, but it won't take away the sickness. You'll still be there. So, when you, after praying and all these things, it doesn't work, then the question starts coming back to you. And of course, if I'm a clever preacher, I tell you, you didn't pray hard enough. Your wife didn't pray. Your sons didn't pray. So convert your wife, convert your son. Still pray, still get sickness. Ah, must be the mysterious working of the spirits. Right? So, that's a good explanation. But unfortunately, a lot of people are so gullible that they fall for it. But when you look at the Buddhist way of looking at things, the first noble truth is problem, suffering. When you exist as a human being, there is always suffering. Right? Regardless of whether the suffering is great or small, it's still suffering. Right? It depends very much, again, on the nature of the person's mind. Some people, when they get a cough or cold or something, they make a big deal out of it. We call them the drama queens or kings. Right? They make so much fuss about it. Yet some people who have broken the leg, still all right. Right? Your patience. Yeah. And some people, even without being sick, they still think that they are sick. Right? So it's very much the mind. The mind's playing up all the time. When you get certain things, some people can stand things a lot better than others. Now, the reason why they can stand the things a lot better than others is because of that, the mentality, and the way the mind works. After all, if you're great, is a broken leg worse than a cold or a flu? Well, we say yes. But to these people who make noise when they have got a slight flu, it's not. It's the end of the world. So, it's very much the way our mind works. Now, the Buddha's teaching is, he never said that he'll get rid of all your sickness or your old age or your death. The Buddha never promised that. On top of that, we got other things like emotional problems. 7 kinds of dukkha. The association with things we do not like. The dissociation of things which we like or which are pleasant. Right? And these are all part and parcel of our existence. It depends very much on how much fuss we want to make of it. If you are a great drama queen, even if you drop a pen, you must make a big noise and let everybody know it, suffer yourself and push the suffering to others. But if your mind is right, then where is the problem? There might be among you who belong to one or the other. But some of you are very cool and very calm about things. When you get certain problems, you are able to be with the problems and solve the problems a lot better. Whereas with others, when they have a problem, they start to not to do the right thing and start to think of the problem, multiply the problem, make the problem a larger problem, and then panic on the problem. Right? So that's why a lot of people get into trouble. And those people who tend to multiply the problem and enrich the problem gets this sort of question. People who don't ask this sort of questions are those who can really accept the situation. Right? Now, again, accepting the situation and being resigned to the situation are two different things. When we accept the situation, we know that it is like that. For Buddhists, when we accept the situation, we know that this is dukkha. So, the teachings of the Buddha is to identify these sort of problems. We've got a lot of problems. Emotional problems, physical problems, and so on, and also emotional problems associated with physical problems. When you grow old, when you're sick, the emotions will come up with that physical problem. Now, supposing we know how to deal with it, we are able to look at the problems right in the face and see what caused all these things. Don't ask why, but what caused all these things. Don't say what caused your sickness, but what caused my problem with the sickness. Being able to dissociate, being able to differentiate these two is very, very important. Buddha's teaching is not about getting rid of sickness. The Buddha is very clever. He gives the responsibility to the physicians and the doctors. Whereas he himself, he talks about the different aspect of it. It's the way we look at the thing, we face the situation. Right? Talks about how we grasp onto things. When we take the example of a small little flu, when you have that, we know that you go in 2 days, but we still hold on very strongly to it. We cling onto the flu, cling onto the idea of being sick. What happened? I'm going to miss this, I'm going to miss that, and so on. Keep on making it worse. Then, instead of getting flu, you'll be getting mental problem. And a lot of us have this mental problem. I would say 99.9% of human beings have this mental problem. That's why when the Buddha preached, he talked about human beings being deluded or being ignorant. We are not aware of all these things. We think that it's natural for us to be like that. We want to be like that. We are constantly being pushed by our emotions on the way we think. Right? And we are, many, many of us do not know how to deal with difficult situations. When it comes to difficult situations, what do a lot of people do? You can either bury the head in the sand and think that it will go away. You can just bring in the problem to other people, tell them, no, this is my problem, and then walk away and still do nothing. But the best way is for us to face the problem. Just be there with it and know what it is. Now, if you want to face the problem in the right way, we got to know that we don't associate the problem with the secondary things, such as our emotional the rising of emotion within us. When you panic, the problem gets a lot bigger. So the teachings of the Buddha is not to get rid of the problem, but to get rid of the panicking. If I'm late for an appointment, what should I do? Jumping up and down is no use. Because you know, sometimes when people are late, you know what they do? They forget things. They keep on going up and down, walking up and down, like a chicken with the head chopped off. But that is emotional state, because the mind keeps on being confused, cannot think straight. And that's what happens to us. If you haven't studied for exams, that sort of, you know, that sort of mentality, what am I going to do, what am I going to do? And then finally, you can't think straight. And when you cannot think properly, that's the time when we have that stress. So what I got to do is, if I'm late for an appointment, I got to know, I'm late for an appointment. Finish, full stop. I got to prepare myself, okay, whatever it is, I got to make sure that I should be there as soon as possible and so on, and I do the right thing. So when you do the right thing, even you got only one problem. When you don't do the right thing, you got more than one problem. Supposing you're late for an appointment, you start to run after the bus without looking for the cars. Cross, there's a road there, you want to cross Anzac Parade because the bus is on the other side. You panic, you run across, the car came, collect you. You'll be even later for your appointments. So this is the thing, when you have got, how to avoid asking these questions. Just be aware of it. What am I in for? Now, if you understand that our problem is not the problem itself, it's the way we cling to the problem. The clinging is very, very important. The way we see the thing, we make it sometimes less serious than it is. That's one way of clinging. We make it more serious than it is. It's even worse clinging. And so we cannot really shake the thing off. When we cannot shake the thing off, it gets worse. Come and takes over us. That's what the Buddha said. It takes over the whole thing. Your perception takes over. Your will takes over. Your mental formation takes over. And eventually, you are in trouble. So, how then? I told you how to do with the problem, but how then to prepare ourselves not to cling on to this problem? For those of you who have been to mindfulness training, I always like to go back to mindfulness training. It's very, very important. That mindfulness training itself is not just you do it because it's fun, you don't do it because it is trendy. Everybody does vipassana meditation nowadays, mindful training. Some people would boast of how many times they went to the Blue Mountains and came back. Right? Sometimes you ask them how much you learned, maybe very minimum. Right? Now, the mindfulness training actually prepares us for all these sort of things. Mindfulness training is to be able to aware of the workings of the mind. Workings of the mind in such a way that when emotion arises, when negative emotion arises, we know how to deal with it properly. When we feel that we are clinging to things, we know that we are clinging. The problem may be a small little problem, but if we cling on to it, it gets bigger. It magnifies itself. So the best way to do is to be able to be aware of this working of the mind. When we are sick, just know, understand that the sickness is unavoidable. Why then do some people get flu or cold, some people get a broken leg, and some people get cancer and all this? This sort of things. There's no answer to it. If you want a religious answer, you get very stupid answer. Like they either tell you it's God's will that you get sick, you get this sort of sickness, or some clever Buddhist will tell you karma, last life, previous life. That's the only answer they can get, because nobody knows the answer. Even the Buddha is not so concerned about the answer. But what you got to know is, when you got a problem, a sickness, I got this sickness, and prepare ourselves mentally how to deal with it. So, Naturally, when we are sick, what do? Get treatment. Go and see a doctor. See a doctor who doesn't work, see a second doctor, get second opinions and so on. Right? And follow the doctor's advice and follow the doctor's treatment. You can go and see a witch doctor, but it doesn't help very much. You can see a spiritual healer to tell you to pray. It doesn't work very much either. But the real actual thing is to do the right thing by getting the correct treatment. When you get the correct treatment, chances of us healing, being healed, or getting better is there. But sometimes, unfortunately, there are certain things which are beyond the help of other people as well, beyond the help of ourselves. If we get terminally ill, supposing tomorrow the doctor tells you that, that all the specialists tell you you got leukemia, and then you went for treatment and the leukemia gets worse and worse, what happens? Simple. Because the Buddha, prepare to die. Nobody escapes from dying in this life. When you're born, you die. And that's a fact. When you're born, you get sick. What sort of sickness you get sometimes can be your choice, sometimes cannot be your choice. There are people who choose lifestyle which makes them get certain sickness. Like hypertension and all this, and you get, it's because of a lifestyle. We can avoid that if we can. Try to live a proper life and avoid it. But if we still can't avoid it, because of genetics and all these things, you still get a sickness, then get ready. And getting ready is to get our mind in the right frame to cope with the situation. That's why, as far as the Buddhist practice goes, when we give this palliative care, it's more to do with the mind rather than to inject more morphine in them. We allow the doctors to inject morphine and then let them be of a better frame of mind so that they can die easily. So when we say, when it comes to our turn to die, do we ask, why should I die? I think nobody escapes from dying. Sooner or later, we have got to go. Whether you go when you're 30 years old, you go when you're 50 years old, you go when you're 80 years old, everybody must die. If you can understand that, then where's the problem? Right, so when we talk about understanding, there are a lot of worldly understanding, right? Understanding of how things come to be. When we are sick, we know, okay, it's because I've been having too much stress, therefore my blood pressure goes up. Or I've been out in the cold, I've been sleeping much, having much stress, therefore I get flu. Right? And so on and so forth. We can understand that. So through the understanding, we at one level, we can maintain a good life. Maybe we understand in the worldly way that, if I don't speak nicely to my, talk nicely to my friends, I don't get along with them, then I don't have friends. This is very worldly. We understand that. Everybody has got that wisdom. Or maybe if I don't do my assignments and all these things, I may not pass my exams and things like that. All these things are quite, everybody knows. But there are some understandings which are deeper than that. For example, understanding how our problem arises. You got to understand the nature of existence. When we exist in this world, what comes with it? There are only three things which comes with it. According to the Buddha, is impermanence. Anicca, suffering, dukkha, and the third one is anatta, non-self. Now, for impermanence, everybody knows. Today you're one thing, tomorrow you're another thing. Right? Things change all the time. You can be sick and the next time you're better, so it changes. As we grow older, we find that we are quite different from when we are young. But every day is a different thing. The weather changes, we change according to it. Now, supposing we were to go against it and say, I'm not going to grow old, or I'm not going to fall sick, that doesn't work. But we can, to a certain extent, we can to say that we won't fall sick if we understand the sickness. and then we can try to avoid it. But sometimes avoiding still doesn't work, and when you're sick, accept the sickness and get the treatment. If we are not willing to accept impermanence, then you're going to get a lot of stress. When you look at certain things, relationship is impermanent. One day it's better, a good relationship, the next day it's going to be a bad relationship. And the body changes, the mind changes. And if we cannot come to terms with it and we won't accept it, we are trying to go against the flow of things, then we can have a problem. Now, saying now, like when I said in the beginning, if I want to remain like I was when I was 20 years old, it's impossible. Right? If I force myself to do that, then what you're going to see is I'm dyeing my hair black, right? Stretch my skin, right? And pretend I'm young, you know, wear open thing with a big medallion here, drive a convertible sports car and all this, and run after girls who are old enough to be a granddaughter. But I don't think I'm going to do that. The reason why I'm not going to do that, because I'm a Buddhist. I quite understand what the Buddha tells me. Don't accept the fact that you come to a time when this sort of things is very artificial. And supposing you don't want to expect impermanence, when relationship turns bad, then we ask this question. Why does it have to be me? Supposing tomorrow a good friend turns out not to like you anymore, maybe we say, what have I done wrong? What has he done wrong? If you find that there's nothing wrong, then we ask this question, because we don't understand that people change their mind. We change our mind very often. People change their mind. So if you want to maintain good relationship, there is a way to do it. But if still doesn't happen, then that's the end of it. Accept it. If you don't accept it, you get plenty of problems. Okay, so the right understanding is about this impermanence. Now, where does dukkha arise? According to one of the teachers, dukkha arises because we do not want to accept impermanence. We want things to be there. We want pleasant things to be there all the time. We want unpleasant things to be not to be there all the time. Right, these are two things. When the situation is pleasant, then we want it to be forever there. If it changes, it will slightly to be unpleasant, we cannot accept that, we get problems. Same thing with unpleasantness. Unfortunately, a lot of unpleasant things is there with us when we exist. You cannot accept, you cannot expect to have good weather all the time. Some days it's going to be raining. And when it rains, if you cannot accept it, you feel worse than those people who can accept the rainy days. Go there and start to whinge about it, and then there's only one sufferer. That's you. And usually that rain business is something which I often see in human beings. I work with a lot of people. When it rains for 3 days, they say, the bloody weather. And they get upset. And feeling unhappy about it. Now, when you look at this impermanence, sometimes we look at ourselves and say, who is there to make things impermanent? Is it me or is it somebody else? Well, when you talk about this way of looking at things, it's because we have got an idea about things which are nice and which are not nice, which we cling on to it. That way we make this person into a very important and strong person. And eventually what we think comes the self. Actually, you're just a thing, a living thing. But when we start to have this mentality of like and dislikes and everything, then we form ourselves into this self, which we call a self. This is me. And when we have got this identification of me, we got to preserve this identification. So these are the things I like, these are the things I dislike. I want to dress this way, I want to do this way, I want to do this way. Right? And some people will want to say, in my opinion, having owning 5 cars is good. So I go there and want to own 5 cars. Right? And when you own 5 cars, you got only one body. You cannot drive 5 cars. You've got to keep the other 4 cars when in this car. So when in this car, you're worried about what happens to the 4 cars. Same thing with people who say, okay, I'm going to own 6 houses. What happens? You can only one body. You can only live in one house. Okay, the other one house, I rent. And when you rent the house, what happens? Are the tenants good or not? Are they going to destroy my house or not? Are they going to pay the rent in time or not? Or sometimes, you know, I say, I've got this personality, I like 3 wives. So in some countries I can have 3 wives. So put the 3 wives in one house, they fight each every day. I get a problem. And this sometimes in this country you can't have 3 wives in one time. Right? You get 3 wives, but one after another. So your first wife, if you happen to have a first wife and you're rich, they split your, you have a second wife, you've got to divorce the first one. So the property goes half. Right? So the second wife, half becomes a quarter. So the third wife, when they divorce you, the quarter becomes what? Eight. So you ask this question again. So who actually is responsible for all these things? It's because the way we think, our mentality. It's because this personality, this self, I want certain things. And what I gave you is very simple things, but there are a lot of things which are happening. Maybe you go back and start to make an assessment of yourself. Go there and say, what sort of personality do I have? Be very fair with yourself. And say, okay, look at it. Is this thing going to be a problem to me or not? Right. Now, if I want to go for 3 wives, I get problems. If I want to go and have 5 cars, I get problems. Right. If I want to go back to my 20s, when I'm 20 years old, as young as a 20-year-old man, I get problems. So what happens? Should I or should I not? Make an assessment of it. Right? When we start to make assessment, then we can do something about it. Right? But unfortunately, sometimes that mind of ours is very strong. You want to cling on to things. You value the thing. Right? Then your mindfulness meditation will help you. Just be aware of the mind working and learn how to let go. There are a lot of strong clingings which we have which we don't let go. And we don't let go, it becomes a problem. We cling on it more, it becomes a greater problem. Until the time when we got into the state where it becomes a great problem to us and then brings forward our desperation. So until now, is there any question on what I've said just now? There would be. Yes.
So you made a distinction between why it is so and the causes. So am I saying that? My understanding is they're two different things, right? Finding out what causes.
See, when you ask why, there's only a few answers you can give until you come strike a wall. Right? Usually when I was young, I asked somebody this and that, and why, and finally he got so upset, he says, the sky is so high. Because when you ask why, you go back and try this thing, ask why, get an answer, ask why, get an answer, ask why, get an answer. Then up to a certain stage, there's no answer to why.
What about what causes it? What causes it that you get an answer?
What causes it is something like why, but don't ask it why. See, just know that, like, when the Buddha says, why do you get angry? Right? The way the Buddha looks at this is yourself that's causing yourself angry, that personality of yours. It's not something else.
Right.
It's because of your ignorance. Right? So that is a that wouldn't make you ask another why. Supposing I give you the answer, why? Oh, it's because, you know, let's see. Because you are so stupid. And then why am I stupid? Because your parents give birth to you. And why did my parents give birth to me? Keep on going. You come to a place where you get very ridiculous question. Usually the Buddhist question will be your karma in your previous life. The Christian question will be, ask God. Both are just as ridiculous. I mean, because people don't misunderstand that karma, therefore they make use of karma to answer why, because nobody can go back. Right? Supposing they say, why does my girlfriend leave me? I mean, okay, that's why a case happening a long time ago when this woman was killed by four men. Right? And then some clever Buddhists mentioned that, oh, it's because in the previous life she killed four men, that's why in this life she became a woman and four men killed him. Would you accept the answer? If you believe, you will, right? If you believe, you will. Now, a lot of people believe and they do believe in it.
But it doesn't matter.
That's right. Exactly. You start the question, don't ask why. Oh, yeah. So that's why we say when I was young, we ask questions which deal with adjectives rather than the questions which deal with proverbs. Adverbs. So we don't try not to ask why too much. Because you definitely will come to a dead end. And people will give you very, very stupid answers.
I have another question.
Yeah.
That is related to your example about owning bedroom houses and being very stressed about it, because every day person would be concerned about tenants being managed. I was thinking, say if a person owns a few houses, then shouldn't they really be taking responsibility for and accepting all the facts that's going to happen to it and being with it and being okay with it?
Yeah, I'm talking about, you see, when I give you an example of the house,
yeah.
I'm not saying you shouldn't be owning houses.
Right.
I'm saying you look at the emotional problem that comes with it, associated with it. Supposing you say, okay, I know of some people, there are a few cases which I know. There are some, when they rent out the house, that's it. The agent will handle everything. Right? And then whatever rent they go for holidays and so on, very happy. No problems. Right? But there's some of them, they go and pass the house and look every day. See whether the tenant take care of the garden or not, whatever. Right? So that is the problem. So, and this guy, the first guy, when there's something went wrong, when the sewage got blocked or no, the toilet is not working and all this thing, you tell the agent, pay for the maintenance. Right? Easy. The other one, you start cursing the tenant. He says, why does tenant always have blocked toilets?
Oh, okay.
So these are the sort of things I'm talking. You see, that's why I tell you problems and the emotional side that makes the problem bigger. Yeah, that's right. So these are the sort of things. This is the mental attitude I'm talking about. How we approach problems. When you're sick, there's a sickness already. Now, if you start going and say, why do I get sick? Right? Supposing I get a tumor in my brain. Right? Now, for me, I'm quite sure it's just to go straight to the doctor and see, okay, the community specialist on the brain, see the first thing, you got to go for operation, okay, get ready to go for operation. Right? Supposing the operation doesn't work, halfway through I stop breathing, okay, bye-bye, go to the next life. Right? Now, supposing if I were to hear that I got a tumor and I start to worry about it, right? Go home and think, oh, it's bad, why should it happen to me? What am I going to do and all these things? Rather than doing, right? you are adding to the problem. Right? And that's when you ask this question. Yes, Miguel.
Well, who actually shot me?
That's right. Well, many times it's like that. I remember when I, years ago, when I, the doctor told me I got hypertension, right? I mean, it's, then I asked the doctor, what am I going to do? And he gave me a list of things I got to stop eating, right? And then these are the things you got to do, blah, 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 and a whole list. I say, okay. Then I went home, bought whatever medicine I've got to do, and then just put on a diet regime for a while. And then my friend from Melbourne came up, right? And he was saying, how's life with you? Then I told him exactly what happened. Then he stood up, he got very upset with me. He says, I don't know what sort of mentality you have. I said, why? If I were you, I'd be worried sick. I didn't worry. The worry doesn't help. Right? When you start to have these sort of questions, do you think it helps or not? You'd be overtaken by the thing. And start to blame everything, blame God, blame your local, the Chinese like to blame the previous life, blame your neighbors, blame everything, right? Kick the cat, quarrel with the wife, except one thing, you don't want to deal with it. So in other words, when you are able to deal with things, these sort of situations will never exist at all. So that's why I said in the first place, if you are a Buddhist and you understand the Buddha's teaching very well, these sort of things will never arise. Understand. So if you are not very clear about it, go back and read the Four Noble Truths. What I told you is another way of looking at the Four Noble Truths. Because you can't simply say that I want to have a very comfortable life throughout. You look at anybody at all, the rich, the poor, and everybody, none of them have a really comfortable life. We may be comfortable in a materialistic way or in an emotional way, but we still got our wants. The poor wants to be rich, the rich wants to be happy. So where does it end? It goes round and round. I mean, for those of you who has been around with me for years, I always tell this every year, this story. Right? It's about this, it's a Japanese story actually, very Buddhist. It's about this little stonemason. Right? He was there chipping away, you know, stonemason, they got to cut rocks and all this thing, make into all sorts of things, statues and all this. And he's working in the hot sun, sweating away at the foot of the mountain. So then he look at the sun and says, oh, how nice it is if I can be the sun. Because the sun can make people sweat, so more powerful. Eh? So then the god heard him, the big great god heard him, and then said, okay, I'm going to make you the sun. So make him to become a sun. And he was there shining at everybody, make everybody sweat. Right? Then one fine day, he came and the clouds came and covered him. So he says, ah, it's no good, I can't shine anymore. The clouds is more powerful than I am. So I want to become a cloud. And the great God heard him and make him into a cloud. So he's been going there, making life miserable for the sun, which is more powerful than the stonemason. Anyway, after a while he was making the thing, and one day the cloud moved and then it was blocked by a mountain. So he says, no, the mountain is more powerful. I want to become a mountain. So he became a mountain. God made him into a mountain, and then he was there, you know, causing life, making life miserable for clouds. Then after he looked down, there's a little stonemason there chipping at his foot. So he wanted to be a stonemason again. You should look at this, you know, for those of you who study that, every time I look at the Maslow triangle, is it, we call it, I really laugh at it. I said, how stupid. We always look at it as, you know, very graduated. Right? After all, life is not like that. You got to have a bit of everything. Right? And in the Buddhist way, we consider that a bit of everything is very, very important. Right? It's not that when we want to be holy men, we don't eat at all, or abstain from this and that. He still have got, know that he still got to eat and so on, but it's just the mental way we look at things. Food is just food. Relationships are just relationships. Enjoyment is just enjoyment. You like it, that's, at the moment it's nice. Like maybe if you go, like when you go, you all possibly you go to the same stall for every day and eat the same bowl of laksa or whatever every day. After 2 weeks you tell me whether laksa is nice or not. So this, it's just our human nature, the sort of clinging on to things. So if you can get over all these things, then life will be a lot easier. And that's why when you start this thing, it's because life is bad, therefore you get this problem. And how to make it, how to make life easier? Just have that thing to face it. Food is just food. Clothings are just clothings. How many of you, when you came tonight, look in the mirror 3 times and say, is it alright or not for me to wear this? I mean, if you are naked and you want to go out, then think it's not right, right? But when you wear a shirt is just a shirt. And if you are warm, any clothes which makes you warm is clothes for warmth, for warm nights. So don't have to worry whether the, you have a sequin here, you got a whatever there. When you, and but a lot of times people will tell me, you know, when you do these sort of things, what happened to our economy? Well, there'll be, it doesn't matter because there'll be a lot of stupid people around. Now, when you look at monks, right? Our monks, when Chao Kun comes, or whenever Nenung come and talk to you all, they've been wearing the same robes all the time, no fashion. The monks have only one way of tying their robes. Right? Nenung has only one fashion. Right? What happens? Do they feel very bad about it or not? I tell you what, they're more relaxed than you are and or I am. Because when they go out, they don't really have to go and look in the mirror a second or third time to see whether it fits the occasion or not. So, that's that. Now, take them as examples. I mean, they can be a very strong, very far from what we are. But at least there's a guide to tell us that sort of clinging. When you go to Lumiere to offer your dana, look at the monks. Put the thing in the bowl. After that, you know, may take a few things here and there, but whatever you give, they've got to eat. Right? They can't tell you, oh, I fancy cordon bleu or chicken Kiev or whatever. They don't, just can't do that. To them, food is food. Drinks are drinks. Clothing are just clothing. But for us, what is it? When I wear clothing, I mean, I'm not so bad nowadays. Like, I tell you the story when I was young, I lived in a 4-bedroom house, 4 ensuite bedrooms, 4 wardrobes, and all the 4 wardrobes are full of clothes. Every time I want to go for a party, I got nothing to wear. And now I look at my wardrobe, I got, you ask Ellen, I got 5 shirts, 5 pair of trousers, and that's about it. Anywhere I go, I just grab, wear. And I don't think you look down on me when I wear this type of clothes to you. So it's this our way we look at things. Right? We bring stress to ourselves. We are always thinking, what others think about us. Right? We look at a situation, then what others would think that if you don't react to the situation, what's going to happen? Right? It becomes a very complex thing. Right? And why not you make your life simpler? And in order to make your life simpler, you should be able to differentiate between the sort of complex thinking, what one leads to another. Just be aware of how it goes around. And most of the time, I mean, this is not in the scope of this talk, but most of the time we live in others' expectations. And when you want to wear something really fashionable, this high heel about this height, why do we want to wear that? Do you feel comfortable wearing the high heels or not? Do you really like the high heels or not? One day I saw one Chinese woman from mainland China, she really this, and red shoes. And she was wearing, she's nearly falling down. And I was telling myself, oh, you miserable thing. Then I realized that It is very fashionable according to her. And who says it's fashionable? She reads in a fashion magazine or maybe heard from friends. So now, how much we do, we shape our life that way. In, for you, it may not be high heels. Maybe the brand of the sand shoes you're wearing. It may be the jewelry you're putting on. Or maybe the makeup. Or maybe the hairstyle. So, look at it. And try to be more realistic. And that's why you find that among the Buddhist Sangha, they are very realistic. To them, especially the Theravadin Sangha, or even the Mahayana Sangha, right? Ropes are just ropes. They wear just because it covers their body, keeps away dirt and all those things. Shoes are just shoes. They wear shoes. They don't even buy the shoes, you know, whether it's the kind of shoes they wear and they stick onto the same kind. Day in, day out, it's the same thing. So, if we are affected by what other people think about us, then we got more problems. Usually what I say is, you think what I think you think I would be. So isn't it complicated? Now supposing you are more, there's a word in Buddhism for it, actually in Mahayana Buddhism, it's just to be natural. Now, when we are natural, it doesn't mean that we have a great disregard for others. When we are natural, we do the things which are necessary. Anything beyond that, we got to know that it's because we just want it to be that way. Right? In other words, we know how to identify our needs from our wants. When you wear clothes, if you think that this $5 shirt is no good, I must wear a $50 one, go ahead and buy. It doesn't mean that you should stop buying. But go and see what happens when you buy or when you wear it. When you buy it, you got to pay more money, which means that whatever you earn, you pay, it becomes less. Then when you wear it, what happens? That is the worst part. Then when you wear it, you show off, the $5 one. Until the next guy saying, oh, yours $5, $50, mine $150. How do you feel again? So these are the things. If we are not careful, these are the sort of things which is going to happen. Now, any other questions? No, don't force it.
Yeah, don't force it. I guess in some ways, even people who practice Buddhism, who understand Buddhism, still feel these certain emotions, and still feel desire for things, and still think the things they know they shouldn't. But my point is there a point where you can practice Buddhism to the extent where you reach the
It's possible. In fact, it has been done. You heard about people who are enlightened. That's the state of enlightenment. But unfortunately, we are not all enlightened. In fact, none of us here are enlightened. So you can say that becoming a Buddhist does not mean that we become enlightened straight away. That's not by the grace of the Buddha, by the grace of anybody at all. We are never enlightened just listening to the Buddha. So that's why we got to set along a path, a way, which we got to work towards that. But to be a good Buddhist always understand how rotten that good Buddhist is. I call myself a good Buddhist because I know how bad I am, how much work I've got to do on myself. And a good Buddhist also don't run away from this prospect of doing the work. They've got this path to follow, I will try to follow it. That's why we bow 3 times to the Buddha. It's an affirmation. You bow the first time, I follow the Buddha. You bow the second time, I follow the Dhamma. You bow the third time, I follow the Sangha. So we already track ourselves. And we know that for us, we are just, if you come in, you're just starting. Right? You go up middle until you reach the end destination. When you enlighten, that's the time when you don't have to practice Buddhism anymore. Right? Because that Buddhism is a guide to us. So which means that when we call ourselves a Buddhist and a good Buddhist, is try to understand how much we've got to go and not to shrink away from going. It's a very, very important thing. Because there's nobody can take away your shortcomings. But it's only through ourselves that we can let go of the shortcomings. And the practice in mindfulness meditation, one of the important aspects is to learn how to let go. Just now I said about clinging. Now the opposite of clinging is letting go. Right? Of course, as we are not skillful enough, there are fewer things we can let go. But as you train yourself to be more aware of the mind working, right, then we develop more skill of letting go. Letting go is to be mindful of how we accumulate all these things. Letting go also requires some understanding. Right? And that's why in the Eightfold Path, we got all these 8 things. And these 8 things will allow us to let go a lot of times. And as we are more skillful, as we go along more to the path, then we can learn to let go a lot of things better. Again, but I got to stress on one point again. It doesn't mean that if I can let go of something, you must let go of it. I do. There are certain things which I consider to cling more, and certain things less. So some people can let go of certain other things. Others are not able to let go of it. So in other words, we don't have a standard to say when you are a Buddhist for 5 weeks, you must be like that. And then 10 weeks, you must be like that. But there's no regulation. Right? It's up to us. The more we do, the more we try to let go. And one thing which you can be very sure of, if you practice that mindfulness, as you go along in the practice, you can let go of a lot of things much easier. But it doesn't really make you enlightened either. It's got to be a whole long path, then finally, when you are able to let go of almost every emotional thing, then there's a state of enlightenment.
Just on that, I find for myself,
now, this is the whole thing. It's one of the things which you call doubts. Right?
Yeah.
The doubts which you have in us. The doubt of my own ability, the doubt of my practice and so on. Now that always arises until you reach a certain stage where the doubt just disappears and say, okay, I know that. So it's in the early stages it's a matter of trying to come to understand where the doubts come from. And good ways of doing that is usually when we do our bowing, it's not just simply in a physical bowing. As you bow, you just know what the significance of bowing. Now if you go to Buddhist services, you know that the beginning of the service in the Theravada tradition, we always talk about 3 refuges, right? And in the Mahayana tradition, in the Chinese Mahayana tradition, the refuges will come somewhere at the end of the service. Right? Now, that is not just words. It's not budang saranang kacami. It's just not words. It's just that you got to know this. The underlying reason for you taking that is because you're trying to tell yourself this is the path I'm going to. So I'm going towards the Buddha's teachings, and basically that accepting the Buddha's teaching is a very fundamental part in being a Buddhist. And after that, when you accept the teachings through these Dhamma talks and the readings, you find how much gunk I've got in here, how much rubbish here. And then the second thing, the third thing is, where does the rubbish come from? You all talk about dependent origination, talk about karma. It's all through your karma that you get this rubbish. So is it possible to remove the rubbish or not? The Third Noble Truth tell you, yes. And how to remove the rubbish? Be mindful of where the rubbish comes from. Stop where it comes from. Clear the load as you go. So it's not something which you can really have a shortcut to it. But a lot of people, when they come to religion, they want a shortcut and say, okay, you know, by bowing to the Buddha, all my sins will go away. No such thing happened. I mean, if anybody were to tell you these sort of things, they're either trying to go after your soul or your money. So let's not believe in these sort of things, but know that if I were to do it, and it's not a difficult thing to do either. It's just being aware of things, just being aware of how this sort of thing accumulates, how these sort of things build up in us. And that's why mindfulness meditation is not just simply to sit down and just lose yourself in mindfulness. It's to be able to train this mind to be sharper and to be able to identify whenever things come out in your daily life. Right? When you're listening to things, when you're hearing things, when you're saying things, how you act, how you react, and so on. And when we are skillful in that, then it's much easier. You talk about clinging. Now, ego and clinging comes together. Right? In fact, if there's no ego, there's no clinging. And if there's no clinging, there's no ego. They go hand in hand. The ego is my way, it's this and that, I think it's right. So when we have that sort of thing, you got to learn, when you reduce your clinging, the ego goes down. When the ego goes down, you can reduce your clinging better. But again, a lot of people say, I got no ego, you can kick me around. It's not like that. I always tell Buddhists are dumb, but not stupid. These are two things you got to remember. People don't kick the Buddhists around the head either. In fact, I've seen too many Buddhists being kicked around the head because, oh, you got no ego, therefore we can do that to you. No. When we know that our stand is right, through our right understanding, right effort and all this thing, that is our right. It's not right because of the ego, but it's right because of the Four Noble Truths. Any other questions?
I agree with everything you've been saying, but I do feel that sometimes we are trying, it seems as if you're trying to talk about the end of our path, when I guess most of what we get out of these talks is something practical, which of course there is lots of practical things that we use to, which we apply to our daily lives to, you can say, actually make us happier people or better people. But some of the things, like you say we let go of desires, that kind of doesn't do justice to the things like people do certain actions because they have goals. Whether those goals are good or not, whether it's pleasure or desire, then it depends on whether they are thinking of themselves or honestly of thinking of others. Like, for example, many preachers, some of them honestly do hope to help people by either giving them what you could say counseling or not,
not just like converting people to the religion for selfish reasons. So in terms of why does it have to be me, I'm just saying, I'm guessing it's just more about the balance and your perception of that balance. So it's not that one-sided, I guess, right?
Okay, when you ask this question, why is it to be me, are you in a good frame of mind? Are you happy or not when you ask this question? Supposing a person.
If I ask that question, yeah. I'd be in a negative frame of mind.
Yeah, that's right. So we are just trying to get rid of the negative frame of mind. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not, you see, the situation, you can't change the situation. When you got to, when, say, assuming that somebody who's very, very close to you, whom you love very much, suddenly dies tomorrow. I'm giving you a thing. How would you react to it? Right? You'd be devastated, right? But if you know how to deal with it, the devastation is only half or quarter, right? So we reduce our stress. So supposing, okay, you see, okay, so death is unavoidable. That's one of the way we always look as Buddhists. Right? When somebody who is very close to us die, death is unavoidable. Right? So, but if you've got somebody who is close to you, say a relative or parents or whatever, right? And when you start, it's a good advantage of being able to know that death is unavoidable. Because that's part of and parcel of what the Asian culture is made up of through the Buddhist teachings. Because you know that death is unavoidable. My father or my mother is going to die soon or sometime. Right? They come to the age, you know, take law of average, they may die soon. What am I going to do now? Make sure that, you know, I fulfill my duties. So you do your duties to them. Right? Helps you to respect the parents, help you to do a lot of good things to them. Right? You've got any forgiveness and asking for forgiveness, do it now rather than when they're already in the cremation chamber. Right? So that is the positive things we do by understanding this sort of thing, by avoiding this. Right? So, like, if I fall sick, then at least I can see, okay, what sort of am I going to lead a healthy life or not? Right? Get a healthy lifestyle, try to minimize that. Right? So it's a way of, it's a more practical way of looking at things. Rather than when this thing happened and I start telling you, oh, I'm sorry for you and all this, it's too late. Right? So this is the way it is. Try to be aware of this. Now, if rather try to ask this question before the things happen than after the things happen. Right? I always have a saying when I teach my children, regret before and not to regret after. Right? So be aware of things. You're going to face a lot of problems and all these things. Now, supposing you know that friendships are, maybe you got good friends or something. Right? Sometimes if you don't handle the friendship properly, what happens? You're going to break the friendship. So try to, if you understand that, try to make the relationship good. So it's a way for us to know, to avoid future situation where you can come into these sort of things. But if we try our best, and still things don't happen the way we want it to be, you got to let go of the clinging. What can you do? Okay? So this is, I'm talking about the ideal. Also, I'm talking about the way to go towards the ideal. Right? So we can go step one, step two, step three, or step four. Right? So if you don't stop step one, you can never go to step four. Right? Now, step one is being aware, being mindful of the way our mind works. Okay. Any other questions? Maybe one more. Last one.
So how would you describe an enlightened person if he was here today? What would he be like? What would he be doing?
Now, I have to tell you,
I
have not seen an enlightened person, right? But we do have a lot of pointers to tell you what an enlightened person will be. That's in the Buddhist teachings. An enlightened person is able to see through a lot of things we can't see through. Right? It's just that they don't have much clinging. For example, they don't have clinging at all. Right? If they're going to die tomorrow, they say, okay, I die tomorrow. If you give them food, as long as it's not poison, as long as it's going to cause them problem, They eat it. Right? And then you give them clothes. To them, clothes are clothes to wear. Food are to keep my body going. Right? And then words are to communicate rather than to show off. Right? They have got very minimum of ego or no ego. That means they don't push their opinion to others. They are not affected by fame. They are not affected by what do you call the Edwins? The notoriety. They are not affected by profits or gains. All these things to them, no. Now, if you look at an enlightened person will never survive in our materialistic society. Right? Yeah, talking about the practicality of it, there can be if the community is willing to support the enlightened person. Right? That's why, like in countries like Asia, there may be enlightened person because you got lay people giving them food to eat. If they got no clothes, the ropes are gone, they got ropes to wear. And then they can still walk around, do things, but they don't do it for gains. Right? And they don't do it because they want to be famous. Right? If you get a very good, if they teach you very well, it's not because they want to be a good teacher. It's because they know the thing, they give you the wisdom. Right? So that is how you would describe an enlightened person. And they follow they don't kill, they don't steal, and all these other things. So, enlightened person will be the one who follows the Eightfold Path completely. I got to tell you that it won't survive in our materialistic society. Well, he may not be enlightened. No, he may be a very kind person. Right? He's a very kind person. He's got a consideration for other people. But at night when he sleeps, does he have a problem? Does he still think, I'm going to expand, going to form another 16 branches in my company? Am I going to make another 6 billion extra so that I can give 3 billion away? So all these things, if they still have got the problem of thinking, then they are not enlightened. Right? When Bill Gates enlightened, he won't own a single cent. Yeah, but that's why we are talking about two different things. One is a normal person who is kind, who is good, and that's what, as lay people, before we are enlightened, we should be heading towards. Right? When you make a lot of money in future, have got this compassion to help other less fortunate people. We can help them through money and service and all these things. We can help them through enrich yourself with good dharma, help them with the dharma. Right? So this is the way, it's part and parcel of our practice. Towards the end of that, when we really could get rid of our emotions completely, then you are enlightened. And what the Buddha says, don't wait for the next life, do it in this life. Like most of us will say, it's too difficult, I wait for the next life. Right? So we keep on giving dana here and there, hoping next life we'll go to somewhere where we can practice our Buddhism very well. Now if you don't practice your Buddhism this life, how do you ensure the next life you won't be born as a cockroach or chicken? You've got to be born as a human being to practice your Dharma. So does it answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah,
to
them, that thing doesn't arise at all. See, to us, we always have got that clinging. Therefore, we think it's dangerous, it's this and that. No, we have got that the speculation. This time, people don't have speculation anymore. I mean, you look at some of the monks in Thailand and in Burma, they do have come to the state, some close to it. Right? You can see, whatever you give them, they eat. Right? Then you go there, you quarrel, you say, why must you quarrel? And give the wisdom to people. Right? And then when they live in a house, it can be just a shelter. They live in caves. Doesn't matter. Right? Whereas for us, I must have this bed, that bed. We want to be like that. But to them, a place to sleep is a place to sleep. So if people are kind enough to give them a mattress, they sleep on the mattress. If people, if there are no one to give a mattress, they sleep on the floor. So these are the things. In other words, we have got our preferences because of our ego. To them, they got no more preferences. Life is just life.
So when they're like,
yeah, it's,
life.
You can say that. No, I tell you, I haven't seen one, but from the various readings of the books and enlightened person, that's right, that's the way. They don't really go and be very picky about things. You give them something to eat. If it's a, you prepare the meal, take 5 hours to prepare and say, this is the best meal I ever prepared, they eat it, it's just food. And then a person who doesn't know how to cook, cook something really rotten, give it to them. As long as it's hygienic, they'll eat it. To them, it tastes almost the same. Or maybe it tastes nice, they know that, but they won't, like you say, I have a next mouthful because it's nice. So that is the way. I've seen some of the monks behaving that way. It's not that they put up the behavior, but it becomes that sort of nature. And that's, they may not be enlightened, but they're quite close to it. So we, for us, these are the good examples which we have. We don't necessarily to be like them, but we can say there are a lot of things we can give up, but because of clinging, right? If you go back like me, look at the wardrobes in the 4-bedroom full of clothes, if I give up half of them, I get half the problem, right? If I left with only a few clothes, then I got only very, very few problems. So look at how these sort of things affect us, right? It doesn't mean that you must really do it to show other people. But it's just a matter of trying to not to be affected by this other thing. Or maybe, like when I say you've got 5 cars and you're not attached to the 5 cars. Tomorrow if the thieves come and clean your 4 cars away, you can tell yourself, I still got 1 more car to use. Then you've got the right set of mind. Right? Actually, we came across this question, one of the young Dharma teachers with me, one year we were teaching some high school kids. And then he was giving an example. He says, your dad gave you a nice, beautiful car which you like. Right? You come to school, you park your car outside the school. And some idiots came and collect your car. That means, bang your car, and now it's a write-off. What are you going to do? So the kid say, I'll kill the guy. Right? So, then the teacher said, my friend said, you kill a guy for a pile of scrap metal? It is, it's useless, right? But to you, that's right. So it's scrap metal, actually it's a fact, right? It can't be used anymore. Right? But he is attached to the car. So the other day during one of the things, I was telling the same story, and then I said, if you're clever, you start to look at the insurance policy, right? Rather than getting angry. Getting angry won't help. And same thing with one of the guys, you know, he was going to kill himself because his girlfriend jilted him. He went after his best friend. And he says, I'm going to kill myself. He said, what? You kill yourself for a love which is no longer there? He said, how stupid we are. That's our stupidity. That's why the Buddha said, you human beings are all deluded or ignorant. Ignorance. It's just like that. And we, all the time we are being pushed and pulled by this sort of thing. So next time when your girlfriend or boyfriend leave yourself for your best friend, they say, okay, go.
Surely
I'm not the best friend. Best friend, you're worse still if you leave for your enemy.
You say
enjoy. Yeah, that's right. So if a person can really do it and without getting really upset, without going back home and bang the table or trying to kill the girlfriend or whatever, or kill the boyfriend, whatever, it is a good state, right? Because the thing is, it's no longer there. Right? You've got to accept the fact. Maybe you can go there once or twice, please come back, and so on, right? But if that still doesn't work, let go. 2 words in Buddhism, very important words. Attachment, clinging. They cause the problem. Let go, no problem.
I totally agree with you with the fact that, I mean,
Well, one thing, good news for the commerce students. The Buddha didn't say everybody can get enlightened straight away. That means all of there will still be consumers, as we say, there'll still be stupid people.
Well,
they agree with you. Yeah, you see, we are talking about growth and all these things. Right? And maybe if you look at certain things in a different way, right? Can a society survive, exist without growth or not? We want the growth. What sort of growth, right? I mean, I'm not against economics. Right? I'm not against commerce and all these things. It is part and parcel of what we call prosperity. But that is what we call materialistic prosperity. Right? We are not talking about spiritual prosperity. You find that in most materialistic society, there's a very great lack of spiritual understanding. Right? And that's why even with very rich people, that question still arises. Right? Now, again, we should not go from one extreme to the other, right? And say, what happens if there's no economic activities? Right? I mean, human beings survive for quite a long time without economic activities. look into the Stone Age and all this. How much economic activities do we have? Right? But the thing is, I'm not going to go into that ridiculous argument. Right? But the thing is, again, if we are looking into what bothers us, and this is a question that bothers us sometimes, right? Are we going to look at it? Now, if there's prosperity, if there are going to be a lot of negative things that comes with prosperity, then we got to look into the negative things. Get the point, huh? And if we can really solve the negative things, and the Buddha gave us a lot of pointers to solve the negative things in prosperity. There's a book called what's the book? Buddhist Prospect of Prosperity. There is a book on prosperity by which is a combination of a lot of teachings by the Buddha. It doesn't mean that the Buddha discouraged economic activities, but not the way we are doing here, right? Not according to exploitation and blah blah. So it's the way we look at growth and all these things. There will have to be growth, but not at the expense of people's life. So, in other words, it's the way the thing. So the Buddha has got two ways of teaching. One is the worldly things. The worldly things is, you know, we still go along trading, making money and all these things. But how do we dispose of the money which our wealth we accumulate? Right? I mean, you talk about Bill Gates, it's a very good way of saying how it should be. A lot of American philanthropists, that they make the money, they share some of the money. Whereas you got some of the mining magnates here who keep every cent to themselves and get problems with the family. So these are the sort of things, you know, we got to really consider. So the other thing is, when we say that there's no, it doesn't mean that when people here acknowledge themselves to be Buddhists, they can be enlightened straight away.